From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening. I am Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida. And since I'll be doing at least some of the talking tonight, I'm not going to host this evening's program. Instead, I'm going to pass it to our producer, who is up in Boston, Massachusetts, the venerable and ineluctably lovely Mr. Brian Charlson. Let me thank Steve Bauer for his work and all the other folks at ACB Radio who make Tuesday Topics the effective program that it is. And I'd also like to thank George Byes of Talking Communities and, of course, Brian Charlson, our producer, and this evening, our host. So, Mr. Charlson, it's yours.
Thank you, Paul. Tonight, we're going to be discussing, of all things, literature. Not just literature, but literature that deals with the subject, albeit, I think, according to Paul at least, not necessarily directly, the subject being blindness. Many of our listeners will have heard of a protest that was held, I believe, last week in front of 20 movie theaters across the country over the showing of a film called Blindness. Well, that film was actually based on a book. And during the course of the past week or so, Paul has found time to read the book, and not only the original book, but its sequel. He told me about this a couple of days ago, yesterday, and suggested that maybe I go out and read these books in anticipation of Tuesday Topics tonight. Well, Paul, I can tell you that I got through the first 100 pages or so of each of those two books over the past 24 hours or so. So I did invest some time in it, and it'll be interesting to see our two perceptions of the two books and anybody else who's had the opportunity to either see the movie or read the books. So, Paul, can you start off, please, by letting us know the titles, the author, and what you can tell us a bit about the author themselves, because I know you did a little bit of background check on him.
I did. He's actually written a number of books, is a Nobel Prize winner in literature, is from Portugal, and we're lucky to have a Portuguese emigre with us tonight, who tells me that the correct way to pronounce this gentleman's name is Saramago. His name is José Saramago, and José Saramago has written two books that we are primarily concentrating on tonight. The first is called Blindness, and the second is called Seeing. And the action of the second book takes place 4 years after the action of the first book. And as far as Brian's got in the second book, it bears absolutely no relation whatsoever to the first book. And so it's probably going to be a while yet before Brian gets to the place where the connection between the two books is actually made. Let me spend just a couple of minutes talking about the plot of the first book, and let's spend some time talking about the first book, because there are a lot of things that are interesting about the first book, for me anyway. One of the interesting things is there is not a single character in the first book, and really not a single character in the second book either, who has a name. They are all described sort of as what they are. So the very first character we meet is a guy who is driving home in his car and stops at a traffic light and suddenly goes blind and holds up traffic and eventually gets taken home by a good Samaritan who parks the car and walks him up to his apartment and make sure he gets inside okay, and then proceeds to steal his car. Ever such a nice person. That guy is the first blind man, and that's really all we ever know him as in either of the two books. His wife rushes him off to an ophthalmologist. There are a number of other people in the waiting room at the ophthalmologist's office. There is a young lady who has an eye infection. There is a gentleman, there's a little boy with a squint. There is an old man with an eye patch. And a few other folks. And these eventually become the major characters in the book. And of course, the ophthalmologist and his wife do as well. The ophthalmologist and all the people in his waiting room go blind. His wife does not. And one of the characteristics of the first book is here you have this single person in this community of blind people who can see. How does she fit in? How does she adjust? And in many ways, she is the heroine of both books, insofar as there is one. As it's discovered that some of these folks are going blind, and as the ophthalmologist makes a report to the Minister of Health, group of the folks who are blind are placed in an insane asylum, isolated from the rest of the community with armed guards stationed outside, with orders to shoot to kill anybody who tries to leave. In the beginning, there are actually two sides of the building, one for family members who can still see, and the other side for the blind. But gradually, the numbers of people within the insane asylum who are blind increase until everybody there is blind. And the government keeps pouring people in to the insane asylum until it's immensely overcrowded, and living conditions are absolutely horrendous. There was no time to prepare this venue for occupancy by people, and so it's just an absolutely awful situation. And the people who are isolated there certainly live in a squalid way, and some of the images the book certainly do talk about blind people not being very careful where they urinate, and sometimes not being very careful about where they defecate either. And civilization certainly seems to break down some. But anyway, that's the initial plot, but it gets more intriguing because within the insane asylum, a group of people decide they're going to become the political leaders of the group, and really not even political because that's much too nice a word. And what they essentially do is they have a gun and they threaten to shoot people who are blind. They go and collect all of the food and take it to their end of the building and tell people, if you want any food, you'll have to pay for it. Bring us your valuables. Well, when the valuables run out, what they then want are women. And civilization definitely falls apart, and eventually the one woman who is able to see ends up killing the ringleader of the bad guys with a pair of scissors that she plunges into his throat. Eventually, another woman, a woman who is blind, sets fire to the building by initially setting fire to a barricade of mattresses that these guys have put up to kind of keep themselves separated so they know when someone's coming. When I say these guys, I'm talking about the bad guys. And so the whole building burns up. She takes her little group and helps them to be sure that they escape, discovers there are no longer any armed guards on the building. And as they start wandering the city, they discover that, in fact, everyone in the city has gone blind. It's not any longer just an isolated disease, but if it is a disease, it's one that everybody has caught. Well, there are some other adventures that we probably don't need to spend a lot of time on. The book ends, in fact, with the small group getting their vision back, because the disease has run its course and they've suddenly got their vision back, and it becomes clear that everybody in the city will soon get their vision back. So blindness is very much then a book about what happens when something calamitous happens to change the way that we interact with society, and also what happens to an outsider. Now, I know Anicio has read the first book, so maybe, Brian, it would be interesting to ask Anicio whether he'd like to add anything to what I've said about the first book.
I agree, Anicio, and one of the other things I'd like you to bring to it is, since the writer is Portuguese, is there some aspect of Portuguese culture that would make this book more, if you will, plausible, or some of the motivations? Are any of them particular to Portugal, or do you see this as universal?
Oh, that's a good question. Paul, you did a wonderful summary of the book. You remember actually more than I did, but I read it quite a while back. Now I'll get back to Brian's question in just a second. To me, one of the interesting elements of the book is certainly what Paul said, but also the how people deal react to fear. It was striking to me that the people were, these blind people and this sighted woman were in this asylum, they thought, surrounded by guards with no food, being attacked by these guys, and yet they probably were there a number of days that when they really didn't have to be, because there was nobody outside guarding them anymore. And I think that there's a lot of symbolism in that. And that probably has a little bit to do with the Portuguese reality of living in a fascist regime for 50 years until the Armed Forces Revolution in 1974. And during that time, there was obviously, like in any other dictatorial country, there was a lot of fear. And I remember going through school and college around that time, and people really were afraid of moving, of saying anything, of spies, and I think this, to me, that's what that this book spoke to a lot, in addition to, again, dealing with tragedy, to anomaly in a culture. But I think that the fear factor, and I think that, again, to answer Brian's question, to me that's the closest that I've element in the book that I've seen Portuguese theme, or any theme of any dictatorship. I'm sure I have not read the second book yet, or at least I've read just the first few pages, and I agree with Paul, I have not seen any resemblance to the first book, so I'm really curious to see what happens.
So I'm curious, are there any others here this evening who have read this book, and would you like to put in a couple of cents worth in terms of filling out the plot more than Paul was able to do?
Hi, this is Darson. I did read the book. I heard about them yesterday and immediately downloaded both of them from Bookshare, and actually got through the blindness one today. I started reading Seeing first and found it really tedious. Thought, well, I'll read the other one first, so this is helping me. Paul did a great job of describing the book. The one thing I'd like to add to what Paul said in saying that these people were quarantined in an insane asylum, it wasn't that they were put in an insane asylum that was being used. It was an old building, which was an insane asylum, but it was vacant, as well as some other buildings that were vacant. Well, where should we put these people? And so they happened to choose that particular building. So it wasn't as though they were put into an insane asylum because they were insane as such. Also, I didn't see the book as being primarily about blindness at all. That's just a vehicle that I think Saramago used in order to talk about society and how it falls apart and then how it comes back together a bit. So after hearing people talk a little bit about Seeing, the second book, I'm anxious to go back and try to read it.
Hi, it's Debbie Hazelton. I have not read it, but a couple of other things that I heard were that when the person or some of the people began to lose their sight, it wasn't that they got darkness, it was that they got a glare, which I think alludes to the idea that it's really perhaps more about seeing in a way, paradoxically. And the other thing is that the people who were all taken to this place and sort of and put away, which, I mean, for some of us, I think it's like the worst fear of what could ever be or whatever was done. But to the people who were taken and put into this institution, it's perhaps important to remember that they were all newly blind. They were not anyone who has been used to being blind. They were all newly blind. And I also understand that there was not one blind person in the movie or no one who's blind that was consulted with in terms of the movie. And I don't know if, in terms of the books, if the author had experience with anyone who's blind or not.
Yeah, this is an issue. I'm not sure if the author did have any experience at all. I would doubt it. At least I have not heard of anything talking to friends of mine in Portugal. There was one blind person that is briefly mentioned in the book that may have been blind by more conventional methods, because they allude to him, to the fact that he writes Braille, and in fact, unfortunately, he's part of the bad guys that Paul was talking about, and he's the one that writes down the names of the people so they can follow up with them or keeps an inventory of the things, the valuables that they bring to the bad guys. But it really is a minor role, it seems like.
This is Dave McElroy in Visalia, California, and I will say at the outset that I have no intention of reading either of this man's books. I do not intend in any way, shape, or form to support the effort that this man has made, and I will make that very clear to anyone with whom I speak. The reason for this, would the same treatment have been accorded if, for example, instead of making a whole city blind, perhaps making a whole city, turning a whole city black or Hispanic or Muslim or whatever you want to say? The answer is you would not have done that because it would not have been politically correct.
Dave, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I haven't read the book nor have I seen the movie, but I've heard about it when it came out, and I heard, I don't know, Paul didn't mention about it in the book, but there were some congenitally blind people in the movie who knew their way around, and they were trying to have an insurrection against the sighted people, but then I can see where Dave's come from, but, you know, there is a place in the movie, from what I heard, that somebody says, I would rather kill myself or be dead than be blind, you know. And the thing is, people fear blindness probably more than anything, and people fear a lot of times what they don't understand. The only thing they understand is probably that about the dark, but people just fear what they don't understand, I think.
I was going to say that it sounds very much like a Lord of the Flies scenario. In this case, they used a number of young boys, I read it years ago, but a plane crashed, and they had basically the stronger boys overpowering the weaker boys as they fought to stay alive on an island before they were rescued. They were, I guess, from like 9 through high school age, and I think Anisio's point is valid in that he is, you know, the author, it's very hurtful and very abrasive to us that he chose blindness as the vehicle for this. But I understand, I think I was going to write and may still write a little blurb to our local Channel 26 in response to a picket that was held, and I imagine we're going to be discussing this in the city of Fresno, that there were pickets, demonstrations held against this movie by the National Federation of the Blind. But I'm wondering if I really needed to, because I haven't heard much about it since then, and I wonder if perhaps this is just another discussion of the breakdown of society, and unfortunately blindness was used as the vehicle.
Sorry, I wish I could agree with you, Pam, but, you know, this gentleman chose blindness. He could have chosen anything. He could have chosen across racial inference. He could have chosen anything, but he chose blindness. And the reason he chose that, I believe, was because he felt that we ourselves as blind people would be the least politically offensive group to offend. And because of that, I have no desire to read any of the books that this man has, now or in the future. I will simply ignore him. To me, he does not exist.
Thanks for your comment, Dave. I think there are a number of things that need to be said about what you said. I think the author very purposefully chose blindness, and for a number of reasons that aren't the ones that you provide. I think he chose blindness perhaps because he already had an idea of the second book that he wanted to write. And perhaps it would make some sense, Brian, if you like, for me to provide at least a short plot summary for Seeing, so that we can perhaps put the two books into context. Because one of the things that I think is significant is that they are really two sides of a coin. And I think that the first book is about really what blind people can see. That is, what blind people can actually accomplish in spite of the breakdown of the whole of society, that moral values can survive. And Seeing is very much a book about what sighted people can't see, and the blind approach often that governments make to crises.
Paul, before you go, this is an easy, before you talk about the plot of the second book, I wonder if I should tune out for a minute, or maybe you can tell me whether or not it's going to ruin my enjoyment of the second book or the surprise, the element of surprise.
I don't think so, Anicio, because it starts out very much at odds, and what I will avoid doing is talking about the connections with the first book. Let me talk a little bit about the second book, because on the face of it, it doesn't seem to have very much to do with the first book, and on the face of it as well, it's extremely politically relevant to the times we're going through now. I should say that of the two books, I immensely prefer the second. So if anybody read the first and liked it, I suspect that you'll find that the second book is even better. Put simply, what happens in the second book is this same city, 4 years later, is holding municipal elections. And in those municipal elections, 70% of the people choose to vote for none of the three parties that are on offer, the right party, the left party, and the kind of communist party. They choose not to vote for any. They turn in their ballots blank. So the government gives them a chance to repent and says, well, we're going to do these elections again because there was obviously something wrong, and the same thing happens. The government decides that it's going to teach the capital city a lesson. So it pulls the government out of the capital, and it also pulls the police out of the capital and the army out of the capital and surrounds the city so that no one can leave. And the whole book, Seeing, is basically about mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake that the government makes in responding to the citizens of the city. They expect law and order to break down. It doesn't. They expect to immediately be able to identify the chief conspirators. They can't. When those guys who did vote for political parties ask to be allowed to leave, the government at first says okay, and then after people are already lined up early in the morning to try to get out of the city, somebody in the government says, hey, psst, how do we know that only the bad guys are leaving? How do we know that only the bad guys are leaving? I mean, the good guys are leaving. Maybe some of these awful people who, the blankers, as they come to be called, are leaving too. We can't let these guys go. And so they make them all go back by spreading the story that, in fact, all of these folks are in fact being burgled by all of these awful blankers. And then, as if that weren't bad enough, the government then decides that it's discovered the key to the conspiracy, and it sends in three police officers to deal with the keys to the conspiracy. But it's very much a book about the blindness of the government and the inability of the government to see what's right before its nose. And it's also very much a book about essentially, it very much raises questions as how much government do we really need? How much do we really need to be controlled? I guess I would say two other things and then I'll shut up for a few minutes. The first thing I would say is there are some sections of the book that are extremely funny and extremely satirical, but taken all in all, the book Seeing is a tragedy. And it's a tragedy that you see coming very soon after the book begins, and the ending of the book lives up to the way a tragedy must always end. And that, to me, is one of the things that makes the book so amazingly good. Anyone who, in a relatively short book, can make you laugh on the one hand, and on the other hand, can make you absolutely dread turning the page because you know what's got to happen, is an immensely talented writer. So that's at least an overview of the second book.
Okay, so let's get this straight. In the first book, we have blindness. We have blind people. The people could become blind. There is total social disorder. In the second book, you have sighted people without government, and there's no social disorder. What does that say? I'm sorry, that has redoubled my effort to ignore this blank, this piece of human excrement, and I hope his books fail miserably.
Well, I don't think it says what you want it to say, no matter how much you want it to, Dave. The first book really isn't about blindness. I think blindness was chosen because it allows a number of things to be said. If you take the guy in context, it's an awful lot more than simply a pastiche that, quote, chooses a particular group because we're the least offensive. Blindness was chosen because it was the image that he wanted to use, and blindness was chosen because of what he particularly wanted to say about the society that he was writing about. This is a guy who has been politically somewhat active, many of whose other books have been controversial. The Portuguese government refused to allow one of his books to be considered for a European prize because they felt that he was anti-Catholic. So he certainly has not felt uncomfortable standing up and being counted against large and powerful forces in his country. He wrote a book called The Gospel of Jesus Christ, and he wrote that book as an atheist and very much wrote about Christ in my view, in a very respectful way. And it's another interesting book for folks to read if you're minded to do that. But he does paint Christ as fallible, as a human being who has to make decisions, who isn't always happy and isn't perfect. And so, of course, the Catholic Church was absolutely appalled by that kind of evaluation, and yet there are a lot of wonderful images and a lot of truly interesting things that are said about Christ. And you're also dealing with an author who, for most of his life, was a member of the Portuguese Communist Party, and who therefore very much saw himself as on the side of the masses, if you like, on the side of the people, on the side of the poor and the oppressed, not on the other side. And many of his other books certainly clearly indicate this. But I'm not going to try to convince you to change your opinion. Instead, I would simply urge others not to adopt what I consider a simplistic and inappropriate approach to these books.
It's Debbie Hazelton, and I'm impressed. It sounds to me like this author is using a lot of satire, showing a lot of paradox. I'm kind of the impression that in the first book, he's showing that, you know, in sort of in spite of maybe society's attempts at narrow vision and assumptions and attempts at confining people, that people go on and find some way of order, some way of organization, even if society tries to, you know, assume that these people can't see, the people find ways of showing that, as I have often said, vision is in the mind. You know, vision is way beyond what society assumes it to be. And in the second book, here it is, these people are able to quote-unquote see, but they don't appear to have much vision in the way of insight, and they, you know, they kind of are going sort of bass-ackwards about a lot of things in terms of people and government and organization. And that's some of my take on what I'm hearing and what I heard in another discussion earlier this week. It sounds to me like they're not in any way just about blindness and seeing, and it's not a cutting book about blindness or blind people. It's a real eye-opening about human nature, perhaps.
David Sunizio, I think you are so correct. We should also say that the first book, a lot of the chaos and disorder and pandemonium in some cases that is created is not necessarily only because of the blindness. Certainly after the whole city goes blind and they come out of the asylum and walk around, I mean, there's no transportation, there's absolutely no infrastructure. There's no water, there's no cooking, there's no, there's nothing. So that's part of it. But the other thing that I wanted to mention also is, I mean, there are some parts of the book that are so beautiful, so wonderfully written, and so incredibly insightful, and have nothing to do with blindness, just have to do with the human spirit, the power of the mind, and the power of people if they get together. Both on a positive and negative ends, and they can be used for both. There's one scene especially, I will not try to paint it, and that's really the correct word, I think, for it, but maybe Paul will. But it's a picture of this three or four women, no, three women, I guess, get together and are able to accumulate some water from the rain on a terrace with buckets, and they use that water to wash their garments, to bring back a certain level of civilization, a certain level of normalcy and decor that the whole description of that night to me was just unbelievable. I mean, the guy writes so well, and that just sitting there and reading the book to me was just it's a pleasure.
Thinking about the, if you will, the negative side of this. I choose not to do certain things because I don't want to be an enabler of those points of view or an enabler old things. Like, I won't buy or read a book by a confessed murderer because I don't want to put a dime of my money into that individual's pocket. I refuse to read many or anything by the perpetrators of the Watergate fiasco because I don't want to put my money into their pocket. So, Dave, I appreciate that aspect of your opinion very much. I still, in fact, deny myself some things because they come packaged with others that I don't appreciate, and I'm simply not willing to do it. Because, again, I don't want to be an enabler of that. But at the same time, it's really hard to be critical of something that I've never truly been exposed to firsthand. So until Paul suggested I read this book and that we use this as the topic this evening, I had no intention of reading this book. Now that I have read a significant portion of it, by no means am I approaching even the midway point, there are a number of things about the book that I like. One is, by divorcing the characters from names like Bill and George and Barbara, we start thinking of the characters differently. There's the policeman, the child, the taxi driver. So we start to identify them with their professions or their relationships to others, the wife of the ophthalmologist, these kinds of things. Not as names that are maybe ever so fine and cozy, but not in terms of this other part of allows us to avoid knowing the people in their other aspects. I also think that choosing blindness or a disability as what differentiates these people from others is also a direct result of, well, we keep saying that, you know, having a disability is the one minority group that anybody can become a member of immediately. You can't suddenly be a woman. You can't suddenly be an African American. You can't suddenly be gay. But certainly, as a result of an accident, you can suddenly be blind. And I think that that lends this to the sighted reader. It gives it a little bit more of a connection, if you will, between the reader and the characters in the story as a result of that. By choosing them not to go black blind, that is, a lack of perception of light as the blindness, but rather a white, milky, if you will, type of blindness, I think that the writer is also attempting to remind us that this is blindness not as a disability, but blindness as a metaphor. And lastly, you know, I don't want to go through a world where all blind people are portrayed as marvelous, wonderful, great, insightful people. We are a cross-section of the society that we live in. We are poor and wealthy. We are clever and dullards, and we're everything in between. And I think this particular cast of characters allows you to bring all those types of people together. And they don't stay whatever way they were at the beginning of the book. They change over time. And I think that's also a good thing for blind people or sighted people to come away from a book that has a lot of blind characters in it, having been exposed to. So those are the positive things about this. I have to say, Anunzio, I'd like to know, did you read this in the original language, that is Portuguese, or did you read a translation?
I was telling that before you got here, Brian. Unfortunately, I couldn't find a Portuguese a digital talking book from Portugal in time, so I read it in Spanish from the NLS Spanish download section, which I guess is pretty close.
So would you say, because I have to admit that I seldom enjoy a book that's translated into English. It always feels more stilted to me than if that had been the native language of the writer. And I wondered if, in fact, we lose some of the poetry of this kind of a novelist when we read translations.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that because, I mean, again, Spanish and Portuguese are very close, so I don't think I lost much or anything in the first book. And I've been quite impressed in reading the second book. So the second book, seeing, I've only, again, read probably the first 100 pages or so yesterday and today. And I'm reading it in English. I downloaded it from the NLS site. And I have, I mean, I think from reading his other book and other books in the past, it just seems to me that whoever did the translation did a really wonderful job, because I can sense the same kind of writing and same kind of, as you said, poetic writing that I saw in the other books when I read it in Portuguese or Spanish.
I want to make three or four points on some issues that have actually been raised by Brian and by Anicio as well. One of them is to say that many of the most wonderful characters in the first books are stereotypically people we would think of as not very nice. One of the most wonderful characters in the first book is actually a prostitute, and stereotypically we would probably perceive a prostitute as not very appropriate. A second thing that I wanted to mention to Anicio that he may not have known is the person who does the Spanish translations is now Saramago's wife. She's been with him for about the last 30 years, which is intriguing. So she certainly brings something to a translation that's a little different than perhaps others. She was a Spanish translator first, and his wife second, though. And the final thing I wanted to say in connection with what Brian says is that I couldn't agree with you more, Brian. I think there are lots of reasons why I hadn't read these books, and a lot of them had to do with buying into what other people said these books and this movie did. And then when the hype over the movie got to be really boisterous, I suddenly said to myself that I really needed to go back and take a look at the book itself. And I'm very glad that I did, because I think that what these books say about society is far more important than what they say about blindness. The blindness is absolutely incidental, and for the most part, he could have chosen something else if blindness hadn't best fitted what he wanted. The other point that I'd make to kind of make my point is the one guy who was born blind in the first book and decides that that's going to give him this huge advantage. Not only is he the scribe, is he kind of the second in command in the bad guy's area, but once the ringleader is shot, the born blind guy decides he's going to take over, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work, even though he's supposed to be the most competent blind person, and is, it doesn't work. And it doesn't work for reasons that are very clear, but have much more to do with the way that the rest of the folks in the whole community respond to the bad guys from then on than it does to anything else. I think when you read the second book, one of the things that will become clear is just how significant it is to Saramago that these people in the first book made huge sacrifices and remained human, remained capable of friendships and love and caring and even sharing love in spite of just immense degradation. And I think when any of you have read both books, you'll get a much better notion of what the first book was about, because I don't really think anybody can really understand where Saramago was going until you've read the second book.
I wonder if it'd be fair to say, Paul and Brian and all that, since none of us have seen the movie, and in fact, I don't know about any of you, but I have not talked to anybody that has seen the movie, has gone to see the movie. I want to do it, but I haven't had an opportunity to do it yet, and I don't even know how visual or descriptive that movie is, or is not. But I think it might be fair to say that we are here just talking about the books, and that we really don't know, or at least I don't know, how that book has been converted into a movie. And we all have seen movies that are very different than the book. So just felt like I had to say that, since I have not seen the movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie either. I have listened to some comments that was made by the producer. And what those suggest to me is that he was surprised by how vehement blind people were, and that he didn't see the movie as being primarily about blindness, but saw it rather as a metaphor. He saw it as a metaphor that was much more political than I was prepared to accept at the time. But I think in the context of the second book, I can buy a little more into where he was coming from. What I can tell you is that when the movie was originally made and shown at the Cannes Films Festival, it wasn't well received, and they went back and changed it quite a lot before it was finally released. And the bottom line is it wasn't very well received here either. I think in its first weekend it made about $2 million, which is nothing. It won't come close to covering its costs, and I don't suspect that it's in very many theaters anymore. I think the only way to describe it is as an absolute and categorical box office flop. The fact is, it's going to be hard for any of us to see it until and unless it appears in some kind of video format that we can watch at home, because I don't think it'll even be in theaters as we speak.
I think you're absolutely right, Paul. In fact, my friends up here who are real movie buffs and would go to any movie, no matter what number of stars it was given in the theater, said that this movie in the Boston area, at least, which is one of the sites where there was a picket, was 12th of the movies for that weekend, which is nowhere, absolutely nowhere. And that 12th is in spite of the fact that it was showing in maybe a dozen different theaters around Massachusetts. So it's not just the result of the picketing at that particular theater. It was poorly attended from the get-go. One of the things I really liked about what I had read so far is that you could take a single scene from this book and publish it as a short story. I'll give you an example. At the beginning of the book, the food was brought into the building and left first for those in the blind wing. They were expected to come fetch it and take it back and distribute it among themselves. And then secondly, for the exposed but not yet blind wing. And they do likewise. And at one point, they were too eager to get the food, and they were in the wrong place, and the military who came in with the food saw them there, thought they were massed against them, and opened up fire and mowed them down and ran off in a panic. And from that point forward, the food was not delivered to them in the building, but for the next few times round, it was delivered out in the yard in front of the building. And to get to it, they placed it in a place that they felt the most safe, that is, the military guards. And they asked a few of the blind folks to come out and collect it and take it back in. And in dealing with issues of turn right, turn left, a little farther to your right, a little farther to your left, you're getting warmer, you're getting colder, that kind of scenario, they verbally directed the individuals to it. But what struck me in that scene, and I know I kind of described three at one, but, you know, what can I say? I got the gift of the gab, I guess. I was particularly interested in the whole issue of connotation, denotation, what the speaker meant versus what the listener understood, heard, and understood. And I think that plays a part throughout the rest of the book. The difference between what somebody intended and what somebody perceived was so dramatic through the book. I remember the quote, you know, in the world of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, was quoted in there. And yet, the lady who could see never, at least in the first 100 pages or so, and I didn't hear anything to suggest otherwise, she really downplayed her vision so as not to have the other individuals think that she was lording it over them. And at the same time, she didn't want to be overwhelmed. And we've talked on Tuesday Topics about how careful we as blind people have to be not to become consumers of the sighted. Our people that volunteer for us or that work for us for a wage or whatever. So there's lots of parts of this book that could be standalone short stories. And as a result, I think that you can read it and get out of it what you want to get out of it without having to eat the whole meal. You can just take one item off the plate.
At the heart of the one person who's able to see, as the book goes on, she's more and more isolated from the blind people and feels guiltier and guiltier about being able to see. By the way, not an uncommon feeling with family members of people who are blind, and feels more and more isolated. And even when things are getting immensely better later in the book, the first sign of things really getting better causes her to absolutely break down in tears because she feels so alone and so isolated and also so burdened. She has or perceives herself as having the responsibility to look after this whole group of people and just doesn't know if she can and doesn't know if she even wants to. And I think that it is that kind of characterization of the outsider, which she certainly was, that kind of characterization of the outsider who, in spite of everything, in spite of anything and everything she could have done, does the right thing that makes her such a hero of this book. I never expected that in a book about blind people, the person I would regard as the hero was the one person who could see. And it doesn't have anything, and I don't know how I can convince people, it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that she can see. It's the fact that she was different and how she dealt with her difference and the courage with which she dealt with her difference. It's not that she could see, it was that she was different and isolated and outside and could have chosen to do so many other things and didn't. She's an amazingly created character, and I guess the other thing that I would say to everyone as you read this book is notice the tiny, tiny and deft strokes that are used to paint these pictures, because these are not long books. I mean, we spent a long time discussing these books, but the books are at most 250 pages apiece, and yet the characters have a vividness and live with us far after the book's over, and it's because of the immensely economical but beautiful way that their characters are painted, not so much by pictures as by what they do and what they say.
Paul, that's beautifully said, and I couldn't agree with you more. If I can just go back to the controversy for a minute. When I first heard that there was a movie coming out called Blindness and some of the controversy, and before even I read the book, I was able to talk to some friends of mine who are blind in Portugal. We're very involved, all of them, in Portuguese, in the associated association movement, blind people in Portugal, and it's part of the European Blind Union, and I mean, when I asked them about their thoughts about the book and the controversy, they actually laughed at me, because there it's not perceived that way. Believe me, they're a lot more militant than we are. They have been able to see, well, first of all, they've known the author for a lot longer than we have. They have read the book, his other books. He's highly admired, and so you start from a different place than we do. But they certainly were able to see that the symbolism and what the true meaning of the book, or meanings of the book, the books are, rather than this narrow view of what it may say about blindness or doesn't say.
One other thing that struck me about the book is I've come away with a feeling that it was written, I have to say that I was sighted till I was 11, so this may be a belatedly sighted person's point of view, okay? But it came across as written like a black and white photograph, or as my friends who are big into films would say, a film noir kind of feeling about it. I remember distinctly the beds being painted in gray and having gray sheets on them. I remember one point where the blood of some of the blind people that were shot down by the soldiers mixed with milk leaking from a container. So they were very stark kind of images, but mostly black and white type photography would lend itself to the film type for this kind of a book turned into a movie. Those people who described the movie to me described it much more in vivid color than I think the writing lend itself to.
Speaking of the voice of the book, I agree with you that it does hop around like a butterfly from the mind of one person to the mind of another, from one voice to another voice. And those voices aren't always individuals. There are times when they're group voices that we're perceiving through. And there are other times that it is, the book is written in, what do they call it, the third voice, or I think that's the right term. Anyway, where we're hovering above the whole experience and taking a snapshot of what's going on without being in the heads of any one individual. There are a few books that can survive that kind of flitting around, and this one benefits from that way of writing down the story.
I'm listening to you, to Brian, to Paul, to Anisio. I'm trying to create my responses as I sit here listening and realizing that because of the sensationalism that we heard regarding this movie, and indeed, it was my opinion when I sat down here that this was a disgusting movie, and it may still be. But I also had a wondering in my mind whether it was just a plain bad movie, and that appears to have been the case.
Pam, I agree with you, but I think when you talk about the buzz about this movie, at least I don't know about you, but all the buzz that I've heard from is from the blindness community, or at least a sector of the blindness community is very much against it, and most of them probably never read the book. I have not really experienced that buzz or the sensationalism from the mainstream media.
I'd like to thank Brian for acting as host and an awful lot more tonight. Thank you, Brian. And I'd also like to thank everyone for a very frank and open discussion. I think that the one thing that we've managed to do this evening is to shed some light on a couple of books that without this program might not have been given a chance by our community. And I, as the host of this program and as somebody who's read both books, would urge folks to stand aside from what others say and give these two books a chance. I think you won't be sorry that you have. I think they have an awful lot to tell us about what it is to be human, and even more to tell us about what blindness and seeing really are, and they aren't what they seem to be. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being a part of Tuesday Topics this evening. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please send us emails to tuesdaytopics@acbradio.org. Just to make it clear, seeing is available as a download on the NLS website, and also now I think is on Bookshare, and blindness is on Bookshare, and I think I saw that it was in process with the digital, but is certainly available on tape from NLS, and there are a number of other Jose Saramago books which are either on Bookshare or on the Web Braille section of NLS. And I would urge people to take a look at some of his other books because they are many of them extremely interesting and are written in some styles and with some approaches that are very different from what we're used to in this country but are well worth looking at. Thanks again for being with us this evening. And remember, seeing has nothing to do with vision.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 2 hours Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. We'll look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.